Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Dave Dufour is in the building. Dave and I are going to be having a little fun podcast talking about defense in the NBA this year. One of my favorite topics to talk about. One of Dave's favorite topics to talk about as well. And we have a fun little concept that we're going to try out here. But first, Dave, how's it going, man? What's going on?
It's going great. I got a good tan, man. I was just at the beach and then went and visited friends in the mountains, did some hiking. You know, things
absolute
are good.
Dream.
Yeah. And by the way, NBA was awesome down to the wire. This regular season was fantastic. Yeah. I probably had more fun at work this year than any other season because the games were awesome. And then so many of these young teams kind of showed up, like Cleveland and Memphis and Minnesota. So it was great for me. I mean, you know how much I love – when young guys can really play, like it's just a different thing.
Well, and you know what? I was talking about this with an NBA executive yesterday. Up until the last 3 weeks of the season, basically, it felt like there were fewer teams tanking than normal. And going into next season, we were trying to identify like, oh, what teams do we think will be tanking next year? Or like not very good, like slash inadvertently tanking. Right. We came up with like two, man, like Houston, Orlando. We thought maybe like we think Houston might try and make the playoffs, but probably just won't be ready yet. Mm-hmm. And then Orlando like maybe tries to make a push, but that's just like an island of misfit toys.
It's Orlando
on the roster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like even Oklahoma City, I think if they get a top draft pick and like maybe bring in a vet, they're probably making a run at the 10 seed. Sacramento is definitely trying to make the playoffs next year. New Orleans is definitely trying to make the playoffs. San Antonio is definitely trying to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. Like, I think Detroit, depending on what they do with their cap space this summer, could be looking to try to get the 10 seed again next year. Like, it's a really, really interesting situation NBA-wide up until, like, the last 3 weeks of the season when teams know they're out of it and obviously things get interesting. And I think that it's in large part because of the play-in. The play-in has done what it was supposed to do, I think, in terms of keeping things competitive throughout the course of the year. And, man, we have a really great play-in set up this year. I'm really excited for it, aren't you?
Yeah. Look, the play-in has been a success. Anything that you can do to make these games matter makes them better. It's just more fun to watch. Like Memphis, look, now that's a team that hasn't had much to play for a couple of weeks. But even they keep playing hard because, you know, you got to honor the game. And I think the play-in's part of that. And, you know, you want teams to be jockeying for position. Like Memphis has played hard because they don't necessarily want to play certain team in the playoffs. And I think that when you have that sort of competitiveness this late in the year and from everyone, not just the teams that are vying for play-in spots. I mean, today even, you had teams determining their seed. And all of that is because of how many teams were still trying late in the season. I mean, even the tanking teams tried hard.
Yep.
You know, we've talked about that. We talked about it this week. Detroit, OKC, Orlando all played really hard and made it tough. So the teams that were shooting for the play-in games still had tough games against some of the teams that should have been tanking. OKC had a horrific win.
It's funny, like OKC, I feel like they tried so hard.
The only team that wasn't trying to win that you could point to and say they were actively trying to lose was the Lakers.
No, Portland as well. Portland was a nightmare.
But they still won more games than the Lakers. What does that say? Since the trade deadline.
Yeah, and the Lakers don't have their draft pick this year. That's what's wild too. The funniest thing, man, is just like, even Portland's going to try and win next year because they have Dame coming back. Like, and they have a good pick coming in. Like, they can make some maneuvers. This is going to be such a fun offseason, I think. And one of the – and we'll get back to the play in a second because I want to talk about that. But one thing that I've been kind of running by people who work for teams, and I was talking to Danny LaRue about it when I saw him before I came down with COVID. And I'm healthy now, everyone. Like, good. I'm asymptomatic. One of the things I was talking about Danny LaRue and, like, some NBA executives I know is – I feel like we're at a point now where there's never going to be a normal offseason again. Like, I think that we're just going to enter this realm of crazy offseason all the time, which has been brought about in large part due to the era of player empowerment, in large part due to the fact that contracts can be no longer than 4 years. There's always going to be a guy that wants out. There's always going to be dominoes after that guy gets his wish to get out. Like, there's always going to be a team that decides, okay, we got to blow it up. I think we're just at the point now with the way the NBA cycle goes, we're never going to have like a quiet offseason again, I think.
Well, free agency is dead. That's the truth, right? So
pre-agency now.
It's pre-agency, exactly. It's sign the extension and then, I don't know, sit out. Just don't play until you get traded. That's the new reality. So, yeah, it's chaos because people just – I mean, the contracts don't mean anything. I actually think that's a negative. Like, this is a bad thing because it's harder for fans, I think. You know,
yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
When you have to follow contracts to be able to follow the sport – I actually think it's bad. You know, it's not a good
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the next CBA is going to be really interesting because of stuff like that.
Well, and the most important thing that's coming in the next CBA is what the results are of this Ben Simmons lawsuit to get this money back. There are a lot of teams that are very curious about the way this is going to go down with Ben Simmons trying to get back this. What is it? It's somewhere between like $18 and $20 million, I think. Like, I don't know. It's going to be fun to watch.
More power to him. If he can not show up to work and get paid, that's the American dream, right?
Yeah, I would love it. Please do it. Okay, playing game. So we've got Brooklyn, Cleveland, and then we've got, and that's going to be in Brooklyn. We've got Atlanta, Charlotte, and that game is going to be in Atlanta. The winner of Atlanta and Charlotte goes on to play the loser of Brooklyn and Cleveland. In the West, it is going to be Minnesota and the Clippers in Minnesota. And then it's going to be New Orleans and San Antonio in New Orleans. The winner of the Pelicans and Spurs goes on to play the loser of Minnesota and the Clippers. Is there any of those four games, which of those four games are you most excited to watch going here?
You know, probably Minnesota and the Clippers, because
I think I am too.
It's an interesting matchup. You know, I assume the Clippers will start small, but there's a debate to be had because Zoo is so good. And I actually think Hartenstein has been really good for them down the stretch.
Yeah.
Even hitting threes and stuff. So I think that's the most from just a game planning standpoint. You got two really good coaches. Ty Lue, one of the two best coaches in the league, against Chris Finch, who has done such a marvelous job up there. And with Minnesota, the Clippers are going to have to make a decision because I don't think they can guard them. I think they're going to have to try to outscore them, especially during the Karl Anthony Towns minutes. You know, that's going to be rough on them. So I just think from the strategic standpoint, it's the most interesting one. You know, Cleveland has kind of fallen off, but I don't trust Brooklyn at all. I just – that game is a little bit of a toss-up to me because of how bad Brooklyn's offense is. Yeah. And as far as the 9-10 games, I just don't know. I mean, I'm going to watch them, and I'm curious to see how it plays out. But Atlanta should beat Charlotte, especially with no Gordon Hayward. That should be a pretty easy win for them. And then with New Orleans and San Antonio, I mean, it's like, who knows? That's going to be a coaching battle, which is kind of insane to say. But I think Willie Green has done such a great job and been so creative. And Jackson Hayes is this crazy wild card shooting threes now. And it's just like, I don't know. Yeah. New Orleans could blow the doors off San Antonio, but it's the Spurs.
I think that's 100% right. I'm definitely most interested in the Clippers in Minnesota. The Clippers have been really good since Paul George got back. Like, they look like a team that, you know, if Kawhi Leonard does play in the playoffs at some point, maybe like midway through this first round series. I mean, like, it seems unclear what the deal is with Kawhi to some extent, as it always does, in terms of what his timeline is. But like, if they could get him back, I mean, good Lord, that team is like scary to me, especially if I was Memphis in that two spot. But like, I'm fascinated by that game. Like, what do you do with Paul George? Do you have him guard Anthony Edwards? Do you try and like use Terrence Mann on Anthony Edwards to not expend Paul George, you know, still returning to some extent from his injury earlier this season? Like, I don't know what you do. I don't know how you go about kind of matching up in that game, but there are so many interesting ways that both teams could go about it that one is just such a fun chess battle to me. I totally agree with you. But look, ultimately, we don't want to spend all of our time here talking about the play-in. We want to talk about defense here. And to do that, we want to talk about all defense, and we're going to have a fun little exercise here. Dave and I are going to draft all defense teams. We're going to go back and forth, and we're going to try and create essentially the best defense like we can, and then maybe have like the fans vote on which one of us created the best defensive team possible. Some ground rules here. Have to have played this year. So no Ben Simmons, no Kawhi Leonard, right? We kind of thought that the idea here is we're trying to create all defense teams league wide, but also trying to create, like, it's a little bit more theoretical than like who had the best defensive season. It can kind of be a hybrid of who we think are the best defenders in the league, as well as who had the best defensive seasons in the league. So in that vein, someone like Alex Caruso, who didn't play enough games this year in all likelihood to make the all-defense team, we're still going to make him eligible, where if like Dave or I wanted to pick him, he is on the board, unlike Kawhi Leonard and Ben Simmons. Dave, whenever you went about like kind of building a 10-man draft board for this team, what were you looking for?
I mean, I was basically just listing the guys that I have all NBA defense and, you know, a couple other guys just in case. Cause you know, I do, positions do matter here quite a bit.
Yeah.
I can't have Rudy Gobert can't be my point of attack defender, for instance. No. So yeah, I mean, I all NBA and then the honorable mentions.
Yep. We're essentially going with the idea of like a guard, like a point of attack defender. A lot of the time, guards and forwards, like wing defenders, are eligible at both guard and forward. So I don't think we're going to have problems filling like two guards, two forwards necessarily. And then you do have to take a center, which shouldn't be a problem given how important rim protection is defensively. It's more offensively that you try and skirt the center position, I think. So with that being said, Dave, I'm going to give you the first pick in this draft.
Very gracious of you. I appreciate that.
So Dave, with the number one overall pick, in the all-defense team draft of 2022, who are you going with?
Jaren Jackson Jr.
I love this pick. That's a good one. It's a good one. Not where I would have gone, but I like it.
Jaren Jackson Jr. should be in the running for Defensive Player of the Year this year. I know Hollinger, that was his pick. I think he's been fantastic. What he has done at the four next to Steven Adams has allowed Memphis' defense to be so special. And then when they go with him at the five, the ceiling goes up. So, yeah, Jaren Jackson Jr., that's my number one pick.
So Jaren was third on my list. A totally reasonable pick, I think.
Sure. Yeah. Third on your list, though. I like it.
Yeah, I really like it as well. I think it's an interesting selection that kind of kicks off this thing, because – so much of this is like schematic in a lot of ways, right? Sure. Like what kind of defense do you want to run? You could run Jaren at the center position. You could run him at the forward position, depending on what your mindset is. I would imagine he's going to fill a forward slot for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. He's been phenomenal this year. He has more stocks than any other player in the league right now. Consistent deflection machine. The thing that he's really improved on as much as anything is just positioning, I think. I think so often the last couple of years, he's gotten himself out of position, which led to him trying to get into these crazy recovery situations. Yep. And he's trying to reach, or he's trying to get his body back in position and fouling. That's all gone. He's figured out the defensive game at an extremely high level at this point. I think it is a very worthy pick, and he is going to be one of the truly elite defenders in the league going forward.
Let's not forget health for him too, right? Like, I mean, lower leg injuries, they can be tricky for bigs, and now he's fully healthy. He looks stronger in his hips. He's faster in his hips for sure. He can turn them faster. So yeah, I mean, I just think he's come a long way. His instincts are amazing. You know, his instinct jumped out to me when he was coming into the league. That's why I love him so much. So, yeah, I'm really pumped. This is also all about me making sure everybody knew that I love Jaren Jackson from the start. That's what it's all about.
Okay. My first overall pick, I'm going Draymond Green. I want a captain of the defense. I want the guy that I think is, frankly, the best defender in the NBA in terms of positioning, in terms of communication, in terms of switchability. He can play center. He can play forward. Obviously, he'll be slotting into a forward spot for me here in all likelihood. Mm-hmm. He was the best defender on a per-minute basis in the NBA this year, in my opinion.
I mean, he
didn't
was amazing.
Play enough. He was absolutely incredible in the first half of the season. He carried the Golden State Warriors to a defense that was leagues better than any other team. We're talking like 4 points per 100 possessions better than any other team in the league to start the season. Switchable, rim protection, anything that you need from Draymond Green, deflections, getting his team organized in transition. Draymond Green has all of it. I'm taking Draymond Green as my as the captain of my defense, as my number one pick here, number two overall.
Yeah, I mean, if he had come back, I don't know, a month earlier and had been at the same level, this is Defensive Player of the Year this year. He was.
I don't even think it's close.
Yeah, he was running away with it when he got hurt. And honestly, like, I'll be honest, I just forgot about him. He wasn't on my list.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. So, like, look.
Because he missed so much time. And I mean, frankly, yeah. It doesn't change my pick at all. But it is funny that he fell off my list because everyone, yeah. There were a lot of really good defenders this year. And when he didn't come back, and then when he came back, wasn't at the same level, easy for me to kind of leave him off.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think I would have Draymond Green first team all defense this year. And the reason is, for me, I care more about performance on the all defense team than I do about like missed games or anything, right? Like, in terms of the Defensive Player of the Year award, I'm a little bit more willing to consider, okay, Mikal Bridges played well over 1,000 minutes more than Draymond Green this year. He should be ahead of that in the Most Valuable Defensive Player of the Year voting this year.
Yeah.
But in terms of the all defense teams, I like to award a little bit more based on performance and make it a little bit more fungible in terms of games played. And for my money, there was no better defender on a permanent basis this year than Draymond Green. That's my pick. Dave.
I don't hate it. I'm assuming Alex Caruso will be coming soon for you. yeah, I'm going to go Bam Adebayo.
Okay, this was my number two. So.
Yeah, I want to create a Leviathan, and Jaren Jackson and Bam Adebayo together as your interchangeable bigs. Good luck.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah,
that's
a wrap. It's a wrap.
Yeah, that's a really, really gross pick.
I know, it's awful. It's so bad.
I don't like it. It makes me sad that I don't have him. This is the most switchable big in the NBA. Just straight up. I think that he was the number two best player this year on a permanent basis defensively in the NBA this season. Just an absolutely staggeringly switchable defender. Has improved a little bit as a rim protector. I don't know how I feel about him playing center all the time necessarily. I don't know necessarily what your plans are. I think it'll depend on the way that the draft board falls here as to whether or not you're going to play him at center or forward. Mm-hmm. You know, the good thing about Jaren Jackson and, you know, Bam is that they are both switchable in some respect. So, and they're both good help defenders. So I think you could get away with having both of them in your forward spots. He's such a phenomenal defender. He's so twitchy and switchable. Like, the thing that people brought up, you know, draft prospects as being like potential Bam Adebayo-ish players. And the thing that they miss is how light on his feet Bam is. He's so twitchy in addition to being explosive defensively and explosive athletically. It's just a really, really hard athletic, player to match, basically.
Yeah, he's got a great second jump too, right? Which makes him such a fantastic helper coming over. And I think that, you know, you could build a defense with those two guys that was not dissimilar from the Draymond Green, Kevin Durant backline from, you know, what was it, 2017 or whatever, when you had Draymond, who was so incredible, not just on the ball, but as a helper. And then you had Kevin Durant, who also not too bad on the ball. And at that point was one of the best help guys in the league. So I do think that it gives you a lot of flexibility on the back line. Maybe even a little bit of the LeBron James, Anthony Davis style defensive front court from the bubble, where you just had two kind of help shot blockers who were able to rotate around. And then depending on how the rest of your defense looks, you got yourself a stew.
Got yourself a stew going. Let's go, Carl Weathers, baby. I love it. Okay. Man, at number four, I was kind of down to two guys. I still am. And it would take me in two very drastically different directions. I really wanted Bam and Dre. I really wanted
both. I know.
It's, oh, man, that's gross. Because I probably would have just played Bam at center and just gone like hyper switchable if I would have gotten that opportunity. Now I think I'm just going to go in a totally different direction. Oh, this is great. I'm going Rudy Gobert. I'm just taking the best guy.
That's the move.
It's weird because when you have Draymond Green, you want this potential to be able to play small. And when you have Rudy, you have to play drop, right? You're taking essentially a guy that, you know, if you build your defense right, and in certain situations, if teams go hyper small late in games, I don't love Rudy in switch situations still. I think he gets a little bit of a bad rap on that end in the playoffs, where you watch his movement skills. It's gotten a lot better. It's gotten much, much better. He can actually go out there and defend now. You don't have to take him off the court at all anymore. And ultimately, he's the best rim protector in the league, like just straight up point blank. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He's also the best rebounder in the league. I am going to shut down the paint with ease with Rudy Gobert out there. I think that is more worthwhile than the perimeter player I was considering. And yeah, I'm going to go Rudy and just be happy that I have the best rim protector in the NBA. He was the guy that was, you know, number three on my list. And I had Jaren at – or no, I had Rudy at four, Jaren at three. So
there you go. I mean, listen, man, Rudy Gobert is very good. I think that the playoff stuff aside, which we know is really not about Rudy.
No, it's not. Right. That team is a abysmal
mess. It's a dumpster fire
out on the perimeter.
Man, listen, if anybody on that team would box out, Rudy Gobert could average 19 rebounds a game. I mean, this guy is the best rebounder in the league.
Well, it's more down. It's more the perimeter penetration they get.
Of course. Like, yeah. That's the defensive. But I mean, just he doesn't even get help on the glass. I mean,
no.
People won't put a body on a guy. And that's why, I mean, he gets caught up in some of these situations. The Reggie Jackson put back dunk over his back last year comes to mind, right? Now, that doesn't happen to Giannis, because Giannis is more physical rebounder and Rudy is very into position. But on that rebound, it's like he looks over his shoulder and sees Donovan Mitchell is between Reggie Jackson and the basket. And I'm assuming, like everyone else who's ever played basketball, he's like, oh, he'll get an ass on
it. Oh, Donovan got him.
Yeah. And then he doesn't. And so, you know, if the guy had some help, I think that a lot of these, the warts of Rudy wouldn't appear to be so ugly. But, you know, it is what it is. And he's fantastic. And him and Draymond together, I mean, that's the best regular season defense, no matter who else you fill it out with.
I think that's right. And I think that's why you have to start with those two.
Yeah.
I really strongly considered the guy that I think
that I'm going to pick
the defensive player of the year right now. But yeah, go ahead. You go. You're up.
Mikal Bridges.
Yeah. That's the guy I would vote for as defensive player of the year this year. For what
I like it. I mean, I think as a screen navigator, for a guy with his height and length, it looks crazy. It makes me think about, you know, when they show an octopus crawling out of a fish tank and do it. Yeah, that's the way he kind of slithers around screens, and he does it in a unique way almost every single time. His angle of attack around and through screens is actually really special. And the way he uses his length is very unique. I mean, just to have a guy like that that is that long, who can stay in front of guys too. Got some help side rim protection. I mean, I now have three guys who can really help you out around the basket too.
This is fun.
We need somebody to send this at the end of it on 2K so that we can see a 45-46 final score, because it's just all defense.
So you're going with almost what I consider more like skilled defenders, right? Like Jaren like flies around and help. You know, Bam is very switchable and light on his feet. Mikhail is slithering all over the place, right? I'm going with like a super physical defense.
Brute force.
Yeah. And this next guy I'm going to take is like the another embodiment of that, right? Like, we should talk a little bit more about Mikhail. So Mikhail would be my defensive player of the year. I think that he's the best mix of having played a shit ton of minutes, having been, in my opinion, the best perimeter stopper in the league this year defensively on the opposing team's best players. He's switchable. He is always in the right position. He gets a ton of deflections. Like it's just, he combines all of the things that I look for, plus he's played a shit ton of minutes. Like that's the thing. He's been valuable the whole season, every single night. I think the next guy I'm going to take also has a really, really great case for defensive player of the year. It's just weird. Like I think Jaren has a pretty reasonable case. You know, I think there are a number of guys that have a real case. If you know, I think Bam has a great case. He just played 1,000 less minutes than Mikhail Bridges, mm-hmm. which is like baffling on some level, right? Like trying to compare those two in terms of value. Like I think Bam is a better defender in a vacuum than Mikhail Bridges, but Mikhail Bridges just played so much more this year. Like mm-hmm. if we're truly trying to determine like who is the most valuable defensive player in the league, I think on some level we have to consider minute load and just being like available for the majority of the season. I would go Mikhail. I think he's the best mix of kind of everything that I look for in a defensive player of the year candidate, but I would also have this guy in my top three, and I'm going to take Marcus Smart. Now, Marcus Smart is physical. He is great at the point of attack. He is switchable down onto fours. He is switchable one through four because of how quick his feet are and how disruptive he is. I'm just building a defense right now with Marcus Smart, Draymond Green, Rudy Gobert, that's going to annoy the shit out of people. Like, yes, that's seriously. My goal. I just want people to be fucking frustrated.
Pat Beverly on the bench coaching them. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Just clapping up a storm, baby. That's what I want.
I mean, high energy, toughness.
Yep. Physicality. I mean,
the guy fights and he competes and he flops.
That's what I want.
But he fights and he competes and he flops and then he gets you mad and he draws a technical. I mean, you're going to own the technicals for sure.
Oh, yeah. Draymond Green.
Spartan, Draymond, yeah.
Like, yeah. No chance.
I mean, that's bad defense if you're giving up points for free. So I'm just throwing that out there. When we're weighing this at the end, those technicals matter. But Marcus Smart, yeah, I mean, he could – got a good case for defensive player of the year. I do think, you know, if we're talking voting, that Robert Williams, his season kind of pulls a little bit of that weight away from Marcus Smart from a voting perspective. But, guys, first-team all-defense, I think, this year most likely. And
yeah,
I mean, he's just been a monster for them and he's the point guard that they were looking for. Well, how funny is that?
Yeah, I know. Right. Isn't it? It's kind of like him.
I said
and
it years
White
ago.
Splitting it,
I
right?
said it years ago because of his defense. That was the guy. Anyway, you want my next pick or do
yeah,
you have
you're up.
Marcus
Go for
Smart?
It.
Okay. Pains me to pick this guy actually, just cause he can't play in Toronto and playing in games matters to me, but Matisse Thybulle has been fantastic and will fit so perfectly with my
skilled defense.
Other three guys. I mean, the nail is going to be the no zone against this defense. Yeah. You're not going to be able to penetrate. We're going to be able to switch every position there. And, you know, I don't know, got pretty good doublers as well. So like we probably press a little. I'm one guy away from proclaiming the ability to run the amoeba defense. I have one guy I need and then I can do it.
Well, and it's interesting that you took Matisse as well because all of your guys so far are so good at just like digging down and flying around and just being like crazy disruptive with length, right? And with foot speed, they all get like deflections and turnovers. Like Jaren Jackson leads the league in stocks. Mikhail Bridges, gets his hands on everything. Matisse Thybulle obviously like gets his hands on everything on a permanent basis, right? Bam is a little bit different. Bam's just more like switchable and stays in front of you, right? Mm-hmm. But like you've built such a skilled defense that I kind of love it. Like these are honestly like
this is
if fun. I had the
I would love to coach this team, man. This would be amazing. Yeah, if you had the first pick, I'd get blown up.
I think I would have probably done something similar to what you did, but I pivoted now, and I'm going on another pivot here, and it fits what I'm going with as well on defense. I'm going to take Giannis as my forward, my second forward. So I'm building the most physically strong, like tough, like beastly defense I can between Marcus Smart, Draymond Green, Giannis, and Rudy Gobert. I have length everywhere around the basket with Rudy and Giannis. I've got Draymond captaining the defense. I'm a little bit worried about foot speed, like having, Draymond Green next to Giannis at the forward line with Rudy out there. I'm a little bit worried, but I'm just assuming that all of their length is going to make it fucking impossible to score.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. I thought you were going to go Alex Caruso when you started talking about physical, because I'm thinking about your point of attack defense and having him out there. But Giannis is just a monster and, motor guy. He has
totally
such a freaking high motor, and it's crazy for a guy to be the MVP and win a title and to still have that sort of motor, and it's all game long. It's pretty insane, and it's one of those things where Bud has to kind of reel him in sometimes. I think they put him on a minutes limit partially to save him for himself, but also he goes so hard he can't play over 36 minutes. So right. I love that pick. Great. I love Giannis, man. He's a top 20 player of all time. He's great.
Yep.
Okay, my last pick. Want some at the point of attack? I want somebody who's burly, tough, great hands. You talk about a guy who can dig down, who can double, who can pretty much do everything. Underrated, Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday. Yeah,
that's what I wanted. I wanted Drew last.
Of course, you did.
That's a good one.
Drew Holiday, my point of attack defender. Nobody scores against this defense, man.
Yeah, this is a good one. This is a great pick. It is with a heavy heart that you have just taken him from me.
And now you got to take Caruso, but
no, I'm probably not going to take Caruso.
Drew has been fantastic this year.
He's been awesome
on both ends. Like, I actually think he's probably all NBA defensive first team. He really has just been spectacular, and he was good last year, but I think this year has been one of his better seasons. He's just disruptive against especially smaller guards, man. Guys, he's awesome.
This is so hard now. I have to figure out who I'm going to take at the point of attack. I didn't think there was any way that you were taking Drew Holiday.
I mean, we think a lot alike here, Sam. I think that We kind of landed on a number of the same names.
Yeah, we did. What I need is like another guy that's just absolutely exceptional at getting through screens. Like
Alex Caruso would be the guy. If you're asking for advice, that's the guy I would lean to.
I was thinking him. I was thinking Gary Payton II, maybe. I think I know what I'm going to do, though.
There's a guy that neither one of us has taken, but he doesn't – I don't know. I mean, he can do it, but I don't know if it's the guy for point of attack.
So I'm down to two guys, and I'll tell you who they are. They're Fred VanVleet and DeJounte Murray.
VanVleet's hands are just sick, man. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Like he took Andre Iguodala's hands, basically. The way that he can swipe down and somehow almost always get ball. It's pretty impressive.
He's tough and physical at the point of attack, but I am going to go DeJounte Murray here, and the reason is length. I want someone – I worry with Fred being a little bit smaller, pairing him with the other guys that don't have as much foot speed – on the back line, what happens there basically is what concerns me. I want another guy at the point of attack who's longer, who gets deflections. I don't really have guys like you do that force turnovers all the time, right? Like Draymond Green, Giannis does to an extent because he gets his arms on everything. Rudy blocks shots, doesn't really force like a ton of steals and turnovers, right? I want someone who leads the league this year in steals and deflections. I want like a playmaker out of the point of attack almost. So I'm going to go DeJounte Murray. There are very few guys in the NBA that are as good at being a playmaker defensively, just making shit happen out there, than DeJounte Murray is. I think he's absolutely outstanding defensively. Look, when we start getting into like perimeter defenders, I mean, like, I've really strongly considered, like, whenever I was thinking about taking just guys that annoy the piss out of people, thought about taking Jimmy Butler for a minute there, taking Jimmy Butler and just pairing him with Marcus Smart on the perimeter, and then going Jimmy Butler, Marcus Smart, Giannis, Dre, and Rudy. Like, can you imagine a more frustrating team to play against?
Like, there would be no, I mean, the offensive end, we can't even talk about. The defensive end would be extremely annoying. Like, you
were just going all defense, baby.
Yeah. You guys would lead the league in technicals for and against.
Totally.
In that instance. Yeah. I was thinking Herb Jones is another guy that, I mean, it's funny to say about a rookie, but like, that guy is a guy on the wing, especially. I like your team. I like mine better, but I like your team quite a bit.
I like your team as well. I think that it's
a function of being able to pick first, right? It's not fair.
You know, it's probably the team that I would have picked, like, in terms of the idea of the team that I would have picked had I had the first pick. I probably wouldn't have taken Matisse, and I don't know. Like, I probably wouldn't have taken Jaren. You probably would have taken Jaren second. So, like, it would have been a different, like, grouping.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it would have been a similar vibe in terms of the way that you built your team.
Well, Bam was the most important piece, but I thought that you might take Jaren if I took Bam first.
I love Dre too much. Like, I can't.
Well, I forgot about Draymond Green completely. So, I mean, again, mea culpa on that. I mean, I may have taken him first if I had remembered.
Yeah, I can't go past him.
On my list.
Like, he's like one of my favorite players of all time.
I mean, I love him. You've probably done this. Do you ever just watch a game and only watch Draymond?
Oh, it's crazy.
It's amazing. Like, on both ends, dude. Like, the guy is a genius at basketball, and it's just spectacular to watch. And he's a coach on the floor in a literal sense. Like, he is literally pushing people where they're supposed to go, pointing, yelling. Andrew Wiggins became, an all-star because – Draymond Green yelled at him a lot. I love that dude.
Yeah, like, listeners of this podcast have to be so sick of me talking about how much I fucking love Draymond Green. Like, just absolutely one of my favorite players ever. I think he's they're smartest basketball players ever. Like, Bill Russell, like, Scottie Pippen's probably up there. You know, I'm sure that we could come up with, a billion different examples. You know, Michael Jordan is certainly up there, right? Like, LeBron James is certainly up there. I legitimately think Draymond Green is one of the five smartest basketball players I've ever watched play basketball. Maybe the smartest. Like, I think that his intuitive basketball brain is smarter than even like LeBron's. It's just that LeBron is also 6'9" with a 7'3" wingspan, and like maybe the best athlete when he was younger that the NBA has ever seen. And then also like passes at that level. Draymond Green is like 6'6" with a 7'1" wingspan, and like was overweight when he got to the NBA, and like doesn't have any juice, like, in terms of explosiveness athletically. He just fucking figures it out. Like, he's just the smartest player. He doesn't have the tools. He's just a genius.
He thinks three steps ahead, right?
Yeah. Not that he has poor tools. Like, he has the crazy length that you need, but he doesn't have like, all NBA level player tools, and he figures it out, man. I love the guy. Okay, to recap, Dave Dufour's team, he picked first. He went Jaren Jackson, Bam Adebayo, Mikal Bridges, Matisse Thybulle, Drew Holiday. It's a hell of a team. You're playing Bam at center. That's a beauty. I really enjoy that.
It's fun.
I picked second. I went Draymond Green, Rudy Gobert, Marcus Smart, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and DeJounte Murray. We'll post these, and we'll have people vote on them, and we will let the human beings out there decide whose all-defense team they like better. In terms of if you were building an all-defense team in the NBA this year, based not necessarily off of us trying to, like, compete against one another.
Right.
But rather just building an all-defense team for, like, awarding players for their accomplishments this year's sake. How different would these teams look in comparison?
I don't think they'd look too different, to be honest with you. I think Draymond probably doesn't make it because of the games played. But most of the guys that we named are at least in the conversation for the all NBA defensive teams, I think. I mean, only guy, I mean, Draymond, I think, is the only guy that won't make it. Does that seem right?
It'd be interesting. So what do you think they do at the center position? Because I would imagine Bam ends up at the forward spot. So who do you think will be the second center?
Well, I mean, I think – because
Embiid has like
a
real case, I think, by the way.
I don't know, man. I think this year for Embiid has been kind of a down year. And I wonder if Bam isn't the second team center with Rudy as the first team center.
Could be.
And yeah. And a lot of that's going to be, you know, if you look at the heavier lift, I mean, Rudy definitely had the heavier lift. And then also Rudy, I think he played how many more minutes did he play than Bam?
Oh, God.
Not to pause the show for that. But anyway,
yeah, it had to be a lot.
Rudy, first team center, maybe Bam, second team center. Although you can switch them. I don't care. I mean, I'm not going to split hairs over that. Jaren is first team, almost certainly. I think Marcus Smart, Mikal Bridges, and maybe Drew Holiday are the rest of your guys.
Would be my first team. Yeah. Drew Holiday, Marcus Smart, Mikal Bridges.
You're really splitting hairs at this point, right? Like, I mean, all NBA defense to me, you know, there are like a handful of guys to choose from at each position. You know, I think you got like four guys pretty much for each position.
You know, what I think I would do is I would go, thinking about this, I would go Marcus Smart, Mikal Bridges at guard, and then go Draymond Green. How would I have to
Jaren enable
this? Jaren and then Bam, not Bam, then Jaren. I was just trying to figure out like in terms of like the center position. I'd go Jaren at forward, Bam at center. And then on the second team, I think I would go Drew. I don't know what I would necessarily do with that second guard spot. I don't really love Matisse, to be honest. I think he
was a better defender this year than Embiid was.
I think he's over aggressive. I know that he's so disruptive and so like he's a really valuable defender. I just mean it in terms of like we're talking splitting margins here, hairs in terms of margins, right? Like I think I would go Jimmy Butler over him, to be honest. DeJounte would certainly be like a real case for me. Fred VanVleet, I think, has a real case as well.
What about Mobley? Neither one of us mentioned him, but I think that
we should have
kind of swooned a little late in the year, you know.
I think that's why he wouldn't make it for me, is like just the tail off. Like, honestly, I've been trying to decide between him and Scottie Barnes for Rookie of the Year. I think I'm like pretty much on Scottie Barnes for Rookie of the Year now, because if you look at their seasons, like Scottie was definitely better for the first 20 games. I would say Mobley was better for the next like 40. And then Scottie, I think, took it back for the last 20. So, like, if you're looking, you know, a lot of the time it's recency bias, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Scottie Barnes has been great over the last little stretch here. But you know what? Like, you look at the course of their seasons, I think that, like, they've been good for equal amounts of time. Mm-hmm. Scottie's been one of the most switchable defenders in the NBA this year. I think he's a little bit worse defensively than Mobley, despite the fact that his responsibilities are shifting so often. He's like a chess piece almost for Nick Nurse. Like if they need a point guard and someone to guard at the point of attack, if they need almost like a small ball center, sometimes it's more at the four, but like they can even throw him down there occasionally and make it work. His responsibilities are so ever shifting that I find the way that he's been able to perform in that regard, also while averaging 15 points and like 8 rebounds and I think 3.5 assists or whatever, and shooting 50% from the field. Like Scottie's been unbelievable this year. And look, Evan, I think, you know, has pretty close numbers to Scottie, just like slightly worse. And has probably done better at performing his role defensively than what Scottie has. I have like this intense respect for the, like way that Toronto and the way that Scottie has been able to act as that chess piece that's been able to move around in so many different ways. I think I'm basically at Scottie Barnes for Rookie of the Year at this stage. Where do you fall on this?
Well, that's where I'm at. The importance of his role.
Yeah.
I think matters, especially as they've been making this big push. I mean, he's gotten better and I mean, he's like, runs the offense sometimes, and then he's switching on to anybody, anywhere. And he protects the rim. I think it's Scottie Barnes, but it's really close. I mean, it's If they did co-rookies, it wouldn't bother me.
I think that honestly, like that would be a really fair outcome. Like if both of those guys get the same number of vote totals.
Well, think
like,
about the story.
I would
of the
like
season.
That.
If you think about the story of the season, right? Like I don't do narrative for awards, but I certainly think on court narrative matters. And when I think about the season, I am going to think about both of those guys as standout rookies. And it is so close that splitting hairs between them might not even be worth it. Just do co-rookie.
And you
Grant
know what,
Hill like, and Jason Kidd, man.
You know what? Like, I'm going to think of Cade Cunningham in his rookie season.
Sure.
The problem is that, you know, we just talked about, like, you know, Scotty was better for the first 20 games, and then Evan was great for the next 40, and then Scotty was great for the next 20. There was never a drop-off from that those two. And this is a full season award. With Cade, he wasn't very good early in his season. He missed like the first, I forget, like 7 or 8 games, whatever it was. And then when he came in to start, he was very not good in terms of just like getting the shooting efficiency back because of the ankle early in his season. Then those next 20 games, even, I thought he was just like kind of figuring out the pace of the game on some level. And then I would say for these last 30 games, he's been the best rookie in the league.
Strong argument
with someone like Jalen Green. Jalen Green, I thought, was pretty bad for the first 50 games, but over these last 30 games, he's been awesome and like would probably be the third best rookie or fourth best rookie in the league over these last 30 games, right? He's been unbelievable as a scorer. So how do you kind of judge that? For me personally, when it comes to Cade for rookie of the year, I think he's a step below Barnes and Mobley. It also helps that Barnes and Mobley are doing it for playoff level teams where they're competing for something, whereas Cade is running the offense and has way more responsibility than those guys do, but is playing for less.
Same with Jalen, right?
Same with Jalen as well. At the end of the day, though, it more comes down to the fact that I think that Scotty and Evan have been better for the entirety of the season. Realistically, for those first 50 games, they were just much better than Cade. Mm-hmm. And it was a little bit too much, I think, for Cade to catch up to at the end of the day. For me, at least, like if people want to vote for Cade because they thought he was the best rookie, or like this stretch of 25 games to end the year was the best stretch any rookie had this year, and I think that's honestly accurate, I would get it. I just wouldn't vote that way.
Yeah, exactly. I think the whole season does. It has to matter. And with Cade, you know, we talked about this on Nerder the other day. He came in with an ankle injury.
Yeah.
And it was just a slow process for him to build himself back up. And then once he was healthy, he was pretty damn good. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think respect to the season. But it's Mobley and Barnes, and I'm not – man, I just don't care. You pick one of those two guys, and we're good. I think you've done a good job.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at too. Right now, I am very slightly leaning Barnes. But genuinely, I think that my preferred outcome is exactly what you said. I would love it to be co-rookies of the year.
Yep.
I think that would be really great.
Let's do it.
I think that's a fair outcome based off of the season.
If that's how the vote comes out, right? Like I'm not saying manufacture it. But right. if the vote works out that way, don't split hairs. Just do it. I mean, it's just
– I would love that.
Yeah, it's way cooler.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a – look, if these awards are supposed to be representations of the season on some level, I think that's a representation of what this season was for the rookie class.
That's the debate we've been having all year.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
The fun one for rookies, I think – like I would have Franz Wagner fourth.
Same.
The question is going to be, do people go Josh Giddey or Jalen Green for that last spot for all rookie? Giddey was great and then missed, you know, a pretty substantial amount of time late. Jalen really came on like a fucking fire truck late, like was unbelievable late. I don't know. I think my immediate inclination is probably to go Jalen, but, it's a question, I think, at least.
Yeah, I go Jalen. That's my first team would be Jalen, Franz, Scotty, Evan, and Cade. That's my first team all rookie. And so many good rookies that you could certainly get upset that a couple guys got left off first team.
Yeah, I think that's dead right. Okay, Dave, let's get out of here. We only had like one minor hiccup while we were recording, so I'm pretty happy with that.
Well, you know, your minor hiccup of being stuck in a hotel room for 10 days, that's nothing compared to the internet outage that we just had. So,
oh my God, Dave, tell the people where they can find your work. Tell the people.
Hey man, the Athletic NBA Show. We get the Daily Ding 5 mornings a week. We got the Slam and Jam on Saturdays now. Like, we're putting out, I mean, just so much good stuff on that feed, and I mean over at the Athletic in general. So check that stuff out.
Isn't Schlecht just the best? Like,
he's the GOAT. He's the GOAT.
The Slam and Jam every single Saturday. It just makes you happy, right?
It's a great show. They handed out the Slammies this past weekend, man, which, you know, I don't know if they're going to hear from WWE or not, but I would have called them the Jammies just to not step on the WWE's toes. But yeah, they gave out the Slammy Awards. It was good, man. They're a good time. It's a lot of fun.
They're the best. Yeah. I'm disappointed that I didn't get to see Alex in Portland while I was here because of the whole I got COVID thing, which was very disappointing.
Throws a monkey wrench in things.
I'm just glad that I've been asymptomatic, you know, for 36 hours now.
Me too.
That's great.
Me too.
That's what's nice. Yeah. Okay. I am working on transfer portal stuff at The Athletic. You know, keep subscribing there and watching that. I will be doing some rookie analysis at some point this week. I think I might actually try and write that tomorrow. Just on the full season, write a little bit about most of the rookies that played this year and made a difference on some level. So keep it locked to The Athletic for that. You know, this will be up on Sunday night for the third podcast this week, which I promised the listeners. It just took a little bit of a delay because of the whole COVID thing. So I'm glad that we got a chance to do that. I will have 3 more next week. That is the plan. Unfortunately, I will be on a flight in the middle of the week, I hope, back to Australia that will allow me to go home. We will see. We'll make sure that hopefully we'll get 3. The plan is to go 3 throughout the playoffs. That's the goal here. So as long as you guys keep listening, I'll keep putting them out. So until next time, please remember, rate, review, subscribe to the show. Do everything you can. Subscribe to the channel on YouTube, Game Theory Podcast with Sam Vecini. But until next time, we'll talk soon.